In the physical world, we close our blinds, we lock our doors, we shut the bathroom door when we're taking our time, and we don't think twice about it. It makes a lot of sense. Yet we have basically surveillance and tracking devices with us at all times, and people are not aware of the capabilities. They have an illusion that somehow regulations or rules or governments or lawmakers will protect our privacy, but they're actively working against it.
Welcome to the Business Bitcoinization Show, the show dedicated to helping you enrich your life and grow your business with Bitcoin, the hardest money on planet Earth. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and our guest today is John Burnett. John shared almost 100 episodes ago about Taquiza Tacos, which is a restaurant he owns down in Miami. Today, we're going to be talking about a new venture of his called Digital Privacy Sessions. If you want to take your digital privacy to the next level, I think you'll enjoy today's interview, as well as the content that John has already created on his website. We're going to get to our interview with John right after this. Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with the Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I'd like to start off every single interview with a few questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better and give us some insight for our own lives. Are you ready for these?
Yes, sir.
Question number one is this: when and how did you first learn about Bitcoin?
So I first learned right at the tippity top of the 2017 bull market, and I learned all the way down. It's Bitcoin likes to challenge you from the very beginning. And I have a great friend and family member that told me about it, and I didn't quite get it. I was very intrigued. Very into technology in general. And I bought some just to try to figure it out and see how it worked. And actually the process of buying it, even though it was on an exchange, was pretty cool. It's just, you know, something else when you're used to this clunky fiat system. And right after, I think I bought it at 14,000 or 12,000 maybe. Not very much, but just to check it out. And then it abruptly crashed to 3. And then I just sat on it for a while and I was like, okay, we'll just see where this goes. And I got busy. And then I really discovered what it meant, what Bitcoin was, which totally blew my hair back. It was like seeing in color for the first time a couple years later, where we had gotten together again. He had just sold his house and moved away. And we started catching up, and he asked if I had bought any more Bitcoin, and I said no. And I said, well, why are you asking? And he said, well, let's dig into it. And then I just said, well, what about all these other coins? You know, those are what confuse me. And he said, there are no other coins. There's only Bitcoin. The rest are nothing. And then we explored that, and then it clicked, and then we spent 3 days just talking and talking and talking, and it really changed our lives. Very slow and then all at once for me.
Question number two, what's an insight or fact about Bitcoin that you wish everyone understood?
That it's not about cryptography. It's not about blockchain. It's not about the mechanics of it, the medium of it. For me, it is really an analogy that, you know, say, for example, when electricity was discovered, the light bulb wasn't the cool part, right? It was just the medium by which the discovery could present itself. And Bitcoin is really something game-changing in this world. I think people will discover more and more as time goes on that it's really the advent of absolute scarcity, which the ramifications on the human condition are pretty astounding, and it'll change everything if we can get it there.
Question three, what's the Bitcoin resource you most recommend to other people?
I mean, I would have to say just from a, if you want to learn the meat and potatoes of it, to understand the, you know, the tip of the iceberg, which is sticking out, I always recommend the Bitcoin Standard. Because there's so much you have to understand that is not really Bitcoin related. I think the first 60 or 70% of that book really isn't about Bitcoin. It's just about educating you to where you can start to grasp why Bitcoin is so important and how it's different.
Question number four, and I'm interested to get your insight here because you're an entrepreneur doing all sorts of things, but beyond Bitcoin, what's a resource, tool, or idea that's been helpful to you or your work recently?
An idea, I would say, is that we need to continuously try to pry our minds out of the system which we've been living in for generations. We need to continuously seek truth, and not only seek it, but not actively reject it. I mean, we have what's called ontological shock, where if people receive information that is contrary to their reality to enough of an extent, it'll be a shocking event, and people will fight against it or push back against it. And this is by design. And being able to tame that knee-jerk reaction of rejection to any information which comes across your desk. And so I try to keep a framework by which to analyze information that even if it is contrary to something I already believe to be true or I have believed to be true, enough of what I thought was true has become false over time that it has made that pliable. And I think that's super important going into the future as people start to learn that the world we thought we lived in, we simply don't, and it's something quite different.
Now we have our final question, since you're a repeat guest. My question for you is, what's the part of the Bitcoin rabbit hole you've been going down most recently?
For me, it's a little different. I think Bitcoin is a study for sure. And it goes on and on and on because it touches everything. For me, it was the door to kind of step out of the matrix to some degree and start exploring. And so it's really been the rabbit hole that's led to many other rabbit holes. And I think other people get there different ways. But as I go down these different rabbit holes and try to educate myself on various different topics, especially truth and history and all kinds of things, then it is kind of a constant companion of sorts that says, okay, yes, this still has a tie back to truth. And Bitcoin was probably, besides other things we know to be true, like, you know, love and things that are not necessarily tangible, it was an anchor of truth that I could always reel myself back to double check that what I'm looking at is indeed truthful or not.
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at Velus Commerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. Well, John, we're here today to talk about a new venture of yours. Longtime listeners may remember almost 100 episodes ago when we talked about your work with Taquiza Tacos, how you're implementing Bitcoin there, accepting it for tacos and other of your wares. But now we're going to be talking about something that you've just begun to launch called Digital Privacy Sessions. I'm interested to learn more. I don't know much, so it'll be kind of an educational journey for me as we talk today. But if you would share with us about that and kind of what got you started going down this new path. I'm assuming you're still doing all sorts of other things as well, but I guess adding this new feature to what you're already doing.
Yeah, I'm focusing my time in places of passion, and that's one of them, digital privacy. How I got there is an offshoot of the Bitcoin rabbit hole. To make it quick, I discovered Bitcoin. It was incredible. I was euphoric. I did thought experiment after thought experiment of how that could change things for the better, how it could right the corruption, the noise in the system. And then I went to the other side of the coin. I said, well, if this is so awesome, what do we have now? And so I dove into books like The Creature from Jekyll Island. You know, there's a section in the later part of that book that talks about the Fed as the doomsday machine, and you know, it gets pretty scary. And then I one day I looked at I searched for the Federal Reserve. I need to kind of understand how this is being portrayed, and I looked at a Wikipedia page for the federal government of the United States, and it was nowhere to be seen. So then I went to a chart of the org chart of the federal government of the United States. And it has the Constitution at the top and has the three branches of government. And then it all goes down from there. And under independent organizations and government corporations was very tiny, the Federal Reserve. And that's what really, it scared me, to be honest, because that everything is downstream of the money supply, which is really just a medium to confiscate human time. And then I went from there to, okay, it's another independent government corporation is the CIA, NSA, all these government agencies, which are really kind of abstractly part of this government or control apparatus. And then you could kind of connect the dots to, oh, wow, those ideas that were planted in our head that the surveillance state is really just for movies is not true at all, and that it's much further advanced than any of us care to think about or can really directly intuit. Mm-hmm. You know, in the physical world, we close our blinds, we lock our doors, we shut the bathroom door when we're, you know, taking our time, and we don't think twice about it. It makes a lot of sense. Yet we have basically surveillance and tracking devices with us at all times. And people are not aware of the capabilities. They have an illusion that somehow regulations or rules or governments or lawmakers will protect our privacy, but they're actively working against it. And there's, I think, is now coming out more and more. And so when I kind of figured out what can I do about this, then I decided that I would just put it out there and see how it goes, and try to specifically gear it towards the beginner, because it's a technical conversation. It's kind of like Bitcoin in a sense that it's technical. It's a bit abstract. People don't know exactly what you're talking about. But if you can roll it out to beginners in a way that allows them to dip their toe into this water, then they can learn how to swim.
Probably within the last 6 months or so at our local Bitcoin meetup, we had someone who is much more privacy focused than at least I am share with us about some of the tools that we can be implementing into our lives I'm curious to know, what's your approach with digital privacy sessions? Are you planning on creating courses, just creating content, or maybe providing more like one-on-one support to help people make sure that their privacy is where it needs to be?
Yeah, all of the above. I currently have a once a week course for, it's broken into level one and level two. It's for beginners. You can be using Windows and email and a smartphone and you're qualified. It is the level one is designed to be able to take action on all, for one, understand the lay of the land, kind of what we're talking about, why it's important, and then to be able to take actionable items that you don't need to change your hardware or your operating systems in order to do. And those steps will basically encrypt and make private most of your communications. And also, it's kind of like a firefighter. It's, you know, you can have a fire extinguisher, an axe, a mask, a suit, and all that kind of stuff. But if you don't know how these fit together and kind of the uses of each one, you're not going to be an effective firefighter. You're just going to have a lot of pieces to the puzzle, which you're not sure what to do. So that's level one. Level two goes into, well, how do I really leave big tech? How do I opt out of the surveillance system? It's like Bitcoin is opting out of the money system. Regenerative agriculture is opting out of the food system, and we need to completely opt out at some point. And this takes more time, of course, for people to wrap their heads around, but it's getting out of Windows, it's getting out of Apple and standard Android, leaving everything. And so this can take more time. And for that, the courses kind of give the lay of the land, and then they can and they're free. They're just pay what you can. If somebody can't pay anything, no problem. Then they can sign up for one-on-one courses or ask for help. And I'm also going to put this into a video format. They can just be released so people can do it on their own time. I want it to be as friction-free as possible because it's people are busy. There's a lot going on. People are struggling with inflation and other issues. And so once a week, well, it may not be the time that they can do it once a week, and it may not be the day of the week that they can do it. So I'll put it out in a video format and continuously update it over time and just spread the word. And in the surveillance state or the surveillance apparatus is like any other network effect. The more people in it, the more it benefits the network. And so the more of us that can opt out of it, then it weakens the network and it allows us to not be swept into this gradual technocracy control system, which a lot of us have heard a lot about.
So for those listening right now, if they were to either stop right here or after the episode, go do something, what would be those high level things that you would recommend for people to do that are just the low hanging fruit in order to enhance their privacy?
So if you want to do just a handful of things, you can change your communication via messaging. So a super simple one is just get Signal. There's a hardened version for Android only called Molly. This is the easy fix to encrypted communications on Messenger. Everybody needs to understand the surveillance which happens when you browse online. So you can get Firefox and harden it, or you can get LibreWolf and harden it, which is a version of Firefox. And there's basically five extensions which you can install. It takes maybe 5 minutes. And these will constantly kind of be your little bodyguards online. Those are on my website. We can go into those in another forum. VPN, I recommend Mulvad. IVPN is also great. I don't recommend very many products because I want to make sure that it's easy to use. VPNs are very important. That'll take care of most of your online communication. And then you can kind of go down the rabbit hole from there. And there's a lot more to do. Because until you get out of the operating system ecosystem, then you're not really out of the surveillance.
You may not know this, but I was using Mulvad and starting to hop on some spaces on X and talk, and I kept on having issues. I think it was maybe because of the VPN. Would that be a reason? Do you know anything about that? Have you ever gotten on Spaces and talked before? Have you had that experience, like with your phone in particular?
So here's the thing, right? People, it's just like Bitcoin in that sense. You can't just buy Bitcoin. It changes your perspectives, your belief patterns, and your choices, right? So we can't have security, privacy, and convenience, right? And so there are those that are fighting against the use of VPNs. You'll see Amazon does not want you to use a VPN. And so those are things that you have to say, well, either I want to be private and secure, or I don't want to have to deal with those things, but there's consequences to that decision. And so as you get into it, though, you start realizing, okay, I know how to deal with this. Yes, I have to do some CAPTCHAs. If I really need to, I can opt out of a VPN service for that particular session. But at large, you can make those decisions on your own. And you can decide to be private when you want. It's kind of like going out into public. You know, you don't need to be private all the time, but you need to know when you're being looked at, when you're private and when you're not. And so these are all types of things that people can get used to, but it's really a part of a mindset that we need to sacrifice some convenience for privacy and security. And mm-hmm. there's other options like password managers, which actually bring convenience to the picture and also privacy and security.
So you mentioned the ease or the convenience versus the privacy side of things. Once you get things set up, and maybe you would consider yourself there, maybe you're still getting there, but as private as you would like for things to be, once everything's integrated into a whole system, is it still somewhat convenient, or does it just add a lot of additional complexity to life where you always feel like you're looking over your shoulder or having to be concerned about this or that? Because I think that is a big thing that at least inhibits people from moving too far down that rabbit hole. How well does everything fit together once you build out your privacy system to where you want it to be?
You know, the pieces are all there. This is not what it was 15 years ago with Linux, where you need to learn all kinds of very technical stuff. For me, it is, if I open up my computer and I need to access my email, yes, I need to enter a couple passwords and perhaps a two-factor authenticator. It takes 20 seconds and it really doesn't slow me down. The benefits I get from it are really immense. And not only that, when I'm browsing, when I'm doing whatever I need to do, it's a much more pleasant experience. It's not just being private. It's also getting rid of the ads, getting rid of all the noise. I have very good assurances that my computer is a lot safer than others, that my data is a lot safer than others. So it is, when you get into the flow, it's not as complex as you think. It actually enhances the online experience, and you know that you're not going to be taken advantage of if you do it the right way. And it is, for example, I have somebody I know that did a couple things wrong with Bitcoin. They left their Bitcoin on the Coinbase exchange, and then they got SIM swapped, mm-hmm. right? And they lost something like $50,000 or $60,000 worth of Bitcoin at the time. One two-factor authenticator, obviously not your keys, not your coin, move it off. But if you would have had a two-factor authenticator, that never would have happened. That's just one solution, which is free and open source. And so it is, there's a perception, I think, that it's complicated, it's very technical, it's going to slow down your life, you don't have any convenience at all. There is some change, but if the person has the open-mindedness to understand the benefits of it, then it is really not that big of a deal compared to the rewards.
You mentioned towards the beginning of the interview kind of how digital scarcity would reshape how people think, how they operate. It would have a significant effect on humanity. How do you see digital scarcity and privacy kind of playing together, and where do you see the future? Like, do you think that this has the potential to become the norm, privacy? Or do you think that, I mean, obviously there's multiple directions humanity could go in. But you can go to the surveillance state, or you can go back to freedom and privacy. Do you see the privacy route being, do you consider it highly likely that that is the norm in the future?
It will, just as centralization leads towards more centralization, more decentralization leads to more decentralization. It's the same for privacy. I think that what we're going to see here, and what we're already seeing, is just, you know, we're in this awakening process. There will be so much risk associated with using software that is not open source and that is not private, that people will reject it. I think we're at the end of an era where we can have giant big tech closed source companies only made possible by the money printer. When people start realizing the dangers of that, that they are under 24/7 surveillance, and it's not just surveillance, it's called bulk collection. They save everything and just will see what's handy in the future. So if somebody has been, you know, good all their life, they've never questioned authority, they've just been a good citizen, then, you know, they'll be okay. But that one moment that they wake up and they start talking against, then there's all this data, this bucket, their whole life. These big tech companies know more about you than you do. And where does government end and big tech begin? Well, that's another good question. So as people start realizing what's going on, the only way to be able to rest easy is to not trust, but verify. And that means you verify your own keys with Bitcoin. That means you verify the code with open source technology. You hold your own keys with cryptography. You only have solutions to where there's no, or a little chance as possible that your communications and encryption will be compromised. And so, you know, there will be some people that go down the path of, just going with the flow. But I think as time goes on, enough people will feel the heat that they will reject closed source, trust me software, and then they will resort to even better solutions, which ensure privacy and security. And I think it's really a question of just getting the public educated, right? This is not something super complex. You know, 20, 30 years ago, nobody knew how to use a smartphone or certain technologies that, you know, my father, he's 70 years old. He can use a smartphone just fine. That wasn't the case a very short time ago. And I think people will start to really educate themselves on, okay, well, why do I need to use Chrome when I can have a better browsing experience by just setting up another browser with a few extensions and I know I'm okay?
So I kind of transitioned that question more towards, will privacy become the norm? I also do want to go back to the other element of the question, which is, how do you see digital scarcity influencing how people think about privacy? Like, some initial thoughts would be, does digital scarcity remind people that there's, you know, information that they and only they can control? And then does that kind of expand their mind to think, well, why do I allow other people to have access to other information that should be under my control? Like, I don't know exactly where you might take the answer to that question, but I am interested to know, because obviously the decentralization of Bitcoin kind of lends itself to the privacy aspect, but how does the finiteness of Bitcoin maybe promote the idea of privacy?
Well, I think it leads, there's a couple dominoes that hit each other in that. The finiteness of Bitcoin is basically that Bitcoin does not leak, right? Bitcoin is the fixed point in space, the ultimate landmark by which you measure everything else. And so you can't make more of it. Therefore, you know what everything else is doing because the money's not changing. For example, if you have a spool of copper wire that's 500 feet long, and then the next month you have a spool of copper that's 500 feet long, but the difference is they changed the standardization of the foot, right? And this is what's happening with money, where they're changing the measurement of value through inflating the dollar. So therefore, you can have a fixed point in space, and you know that nothing else is changing. The second thing is the medium by which this is done is Bitcoin, which is lending itself towards securing cyberspace. So this hasn't really been talked about in too many circles, but there are people talking about it a great deal that understand it, that the internet and cyberspace and everything that happens online will change through taking real world energy, converting it to information, and then securing cyberspace with it. So all of this plays hand in hand, and there's different mechanisms by which this can be done, but Michael Saylor's talked about it. Jason Lowry's talked about it. There's been a lot of people that have talked about how you can basically turn cyberspace into something else than the Wild West of scams and spams and surveillance by putting limits. And these limits are downstream of the digital scarcity.
So I know we've only scratched the surface here, but if people are interested in learning more, where can they go to keep up with what you're doing and maybe even enroll in a course or reach out to you for more one-on-one support?
Sure. Everything is on the website, digitalprivacysessions.io. And there you can find Twitter, Noster, and we have a Matrix chat. If people don't know how to join Matrix, it's a good good way to get into digital privacy. So just hit us up. There's a form to ask questions, email, all of the above.
Great. John, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. Likewise. Thank you.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Business Bitcoinization Show. If you want to reach out to either me or John, you can find those links down in the show notes. And be sure to check out digitalprivacysessions.io. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading well. I want to take a second to thank those who've been supporting the show on Fountain across the last month or so. Thanks to No Waste, BTC Signs, Satoru Stakamoto, Bowtied Groundhog, and Tapatingo for streaming sats to the show. Thank you also to those who have sent boosts. There were two from the recent episode with Andre Van Heerden about his new company, Air BTC. EU BTC Maxi sent 100 sats and said, great episode, medium of exchange for the win. And Wartime sent 1,000 sats and said, good show, but a friend that Airbnbs his property said the fees on Air BTC are way too high. I can't speak to the fees, but I'm guessing that if he can, Andre will bring those down over time. Also, we have a boost from last week's episode with Oliver Porter from Jippy. An anonymous user sent 100 sats and said, thank you, sir. If you would like to support the show, you can listen on the Fountain app and either stream sats as you listen or send a boost. And if you include a note with that boost, I will plan to read it on the show.